Blog Talk Radio.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? CounterRacism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cows. This is Justice here at Block Talk Radio. If you want to learn, listen, understand, and question, go to blogtalkradio.com/victim-of-racism. And for more information on racism and white supremacy, go to my blog, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com. My email address is justice.asap@yahoo.com. Replace white supremacy with justice. ASAP.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade and Justice in for another program to share constructive information on racism, white supremacy, what it is, and how it works. This would be the third program in the past 12 hours. Counter-racist grind. I actually shouldn't even say that because we could have just been wasting time for the past few hours. I hope that has not been the case. Dr. Kevorkian was here earlier on Saturday. That would be Saturday, January the 29th. Dr. Kevorkian was here, admitted racist. We discussed four films: Solo, Splice, Nothing Man, and Astro Boy. Very interesting films. And again, I don't recall who made the suggestion, but whomever said, you know, check out the experiment. That was what was responsible for about half of the films that we discussed today. What I thought was a great program. It's, you know, always I'm pretty excited to have Dr. Kevorkian come hang out on the program. He is an admitted racist, but I do think he generally gives very constructive information. Today, no exception. I thought he had great information. I would recommend anyone, if you missed that program, go back and check it out. And I think that program will increase in value if you have seen those films. I don't know. I know half of those films are more recent. They came out in 2009. The other half, they're slightly older films. So I'm not sure, particularly if you have not seen Nothing But a Man. Check out Nothing But a Man. Excellent film. In my opinion, Ivan Dixon, his character, Ivan Dixon looks exactly like Edward Williams. I told him that on the phone, and he hadn't even seen Nothing But a Man, so he couldn't comment one way or another. But in my opinion, Ivan Dixon, that is Edward Williams' twin. But yeah, you should check that out. You should check it out regardless whether you listen to the program with Dr. Kevorkian or not, because Nothing But a Man, I mean, it really gives you the ugliness of white supremacy, and particularly when Dr. Baruti, when he and Dr. Welsing and other people talk about the system of white supremacy destroys black families, when Mr. Fuller says the system of white supremacy does not permit black fathers, black mothers. I think we talked about that a ton with Mother and Child earlier this week. Man, Nothing But a Man will show you how the system of white supremacy annihilates black families. Anyway, moving forward, the reason I did this program, just to be, you know, on the racist grind, when Mr. Edward Williams, that was program number two on Saturday, January 29th, he said that a part of his counter-racist science is attempting to use as much of his time and energy as possible to combat the system of racism, white supremacy. And I just think that's just a real scientific way, logical way of looking at it. You know, how much of my time and energy am I investing in working against the system versus how much of my time and energy am I supporting the system? Because if you're not working against it, you're supporting it. And I would even say, and I think Mr. Williams would agree, some of that time that you are working against the system of racism, white supremacy, as long as the system is still here, it is possible that you could be supporting it. So you never can really be certain as long as the system is still in place. So just, you know, just got to try to do as much as you can with the time and energy that you have. So that's why we're here yet again. I guess I also want to begin with the urgency, you know, behind what would motivate any non-white person. Mr. Fuller, you know, Dr. Welsing, these folks who've been out here for 40 years writing, doing radio programs, doing interviews, talking about racism, white supremacy, the urgency that I think non-white people should have. Been, you know, doing a lot of programs this week, so I haven't kept up with the news as much as I should have. So I tried to compensate and do some checking in between programs. And this is from Monday, January 24th. Again, the urgency of counter-racism. For anyone listening in, you know, why do you always talk about racism? Why can't we talk about something else? You know, people who say, why does it have to be so serious? No sex with white people. Counter-violence, I mean, talking about killing people, why does it have to be so serious? This is why. Local civil rights groups gather to discuss new allegations of racism at the Houston Fire Department. A local activist group is speaking out against the Houston Fire Department in what has become the latest in a long line of complaints of racism within the fire department. The city is now investigating a complaint from a Latino firefighter who says he was humiliated after finding a racially offensive display in his fire station locker. The incident allegedly happened the last week of September at Fire Station 42 on the city's east side. The firefighter who was targeted requested a transfer. Now, a local civil rights organization is urging the federal government to investigate. The alleged target of the racism is Joseph Salcido, a Hispanic firefighter. Salcido claims to have found his gear hanging from the station's ceiling by a noose with a sign attached. Learn your effing job, Mexican. Be glad you're not in Arizona, end quote. Now, that's interesting because I don't know if they mean be glad you're not in Arizona, where they got all the new laws about you got to have proof of citizenship and all that, or if they mean be glad you're not in Arizona, where they just have the white terrorism and the murders. I don't know what the reference point is now. At any rate, civil rights activist Sylvia Gonzalez said about what the sign read. It allegedly happened in late September after Salcido supposedly did poorly on a test. At a news conference on Monday morning, these civil rights activists demanded more to stop what they are calling civil rights hate crimes. Meanwhile, the city says it has launched an investigation. We take any allegation of racial harassment very seriously, said City Attorney Dave Feldman. This matter has been under investigation by the OIG, and it is my understanding that the investigation is near completion. Nothing further can be said until the investigation is complete. This has got to stop, civil rights attorney Randall Kalanen said. The city won't do it, and we need the federal government to come in. They believe the city has fallen short on its promise to clean up the racism and sexism within the fire department. We want to be proud of our fire department. We don't want this to go on any longer. This is a thing of the past, and it doesn't have any role in the city of Houston at this time, said Dave Atwood, the Houston Peace and Justice Center. Just last week, a federal report agreed, citing Houston firefighter Jane Draycott was subjected to a hostile work environment based on her gender. On Monday, those civil rights leaders called that behavior unprofessional, barbaric, and intolerable. We want our firefighters to be professionals. We want the department to be considered professional. And when there is racism and sexism among members of the fire department, that is not professionalism, said one civil rights leader. So I would just like to call the fire department, the fire chief, and everybody involved in that operation to be the professionals we all want them to be. The local civil rights leaders had some pretty clear messages today to the firefighters who contribute to this hostile work environment. Their message is, we want you out and we want you criminally investigated. The group is now calling the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission to take legal action against the city. End of the report. This is, from ABC 13, abclocal.go.com. The name of the report is Local Civil Rights Groups Gather to Discuss New Allegations of Racism at Houston Fire Department. This is from Monday, January 24th. Now, I mean, this is pathetic. What does Mr. Fuller say? Tacky, trashy, terroristic. The fire department? I thought we're supposed to be about saving lives, making sure people's homes, you know, are not destroyed, making sure that, you know, people are not harmed should a fire break out. We can't even get to that. You got a gentleman who did poorly on his test as a firefighter, as opposed to let's get this gentleman help. You know, maybe he needs to take the test again. Maybe we need to refine how we are teaching individuals to combat fire. Instead of that, it's time to practice racism. that's why this is program number three. And if I had the ability, I would do more programs, because this is totally, totally unacceptable. It is an embarrassment. It should not be allowed to continue another 5 seconds. We should be doing as much as we possibly can to get rid of this system immediately, by any means, including counter violence. The next news report that I found, like I said, I was just compensating, and I tried to take some time to look today to see if there was anything going on in the news. This reminds me, I think it's been about 2 weeks since I called Deborah Carter. She is the mother of Frederick Germain Carter. I will attempt to call her again this week and see if she's heard any new information about the autopsy or what happened with the death of her son. So I'll do that. If not tomorrow, I'll do it Monday. I'll do it in the next 48 hours and report back what I find out. And yeah, we'll see if we can maybe get a follow-up program dealing with that. Before I read this next report, I don't think I touched at all the program we had with Mr. Edward Williams on Saturday, January 29th. It ended at almost the exact same time as the program on Friday, January 28th. Both of these programs ended prematurely. I was disconnected from both programs. The really bizarre thing that happened with the broadcast on Saturday, January 29th, there was a rhythmic humming noise. It buzzed. It would start. It was pulsing almost. It was like boop, boop, boop. That's about what it sounded like. And it went on for about 30 to 40 seconds. And I had a conference call on my Skype line, and I asked the other person, I said, you know, am I the only one hearing this? At the time, I didn't even know I had been disconnected from the show line. And he said, yes, I can hear this. And I still waited, couldn't hear anything, didn't hear anything on the show line. And I just waited, and it took about 2 minutes, and then finally I disconnected from the show line. Same thing, I never lost my internet connection, never lost my Skype connection. I was just disconnected from the show line. Don't know how it happened, but it happened at almost the exact same time as the program on Friday, January 28th, with Mr. Williams, where I also got disconnected. So I'm not sure what happened. I did contact the people at Blog Talk Radio. They did write me back, and they didn't really give me, you know, tons of useful information. They asked me questions, basically. I'm going to respond and kind of stay on top of this, but I would really encourage folks to write letters. As I said, we have given them some money now, so they should be more responsive to problems that we are encountering, and just something to be mindful of. You know, this is the sort of thing that one should expect. If there is a system of white supremacy, resistance, you know, this is small potato business of counter racism. But I think racist man and a racist woman know that their system can be toppled. There are things non-white people can do and not do that would bring this system to a halt, and they're going to, you know, do everything that they can to disrupt those counter efforts. So, you know, just expect that and be prepared to be determined and undeterred. So this is the next report. I'm not going to read this entire report. It is sports related, but I'm really only reading this because the Super Bowl is next week. I hope to be doing a program at the same time as the Super Bowl, so people will have an alternative. But yeah, I'm just reading this one report because the title of the article is "The Rooney Way: The Steelers, Racism, Hypocrisy, Gambling, and Cheating." Okay. As I said, I'm skipping through, but I'm just reading this because this gets kind of back to that sexual deviance. We talked about that quite a bit today. And I mean, man, we got a story. One of the quarterbacks that's going to be in the Super Bowl next week, he began the season on the bench. He was suspended for the first four games for sexual misconduct, Ben Roethlisberger for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he's going to be playing next week, you know, Super Bowl. And I really want people to think about that because I used to be a huge sports fan. I wasted tons of time and energy on sports as though it meant something. And I remember when the Baltimore Ravens went to the Super Bowl in 2000. And the Ravens, 2001 Super Bowl. But the Ravens, Ray Lewis was on that team. I believe he won Defensive Player of the Year. Just, you know, he was at the peak of his abilities. And at the start of the season, he was incarcerated, greater confinement. There was a murder of a black male in Atlanta, which is not unusual. And I think he was held as a suspect, and eventually he was charged and I believe convicted of withholding information or something. White people said that he knew something and didn't want to tell them and charged him with a crime in connection to that. At any rate, he got out of greater confinement before the beginning of the season, had a great season. They went to the Super Bowl, won the Super Bowl. And it was all this talk at the Super Bowl every day, you know, Ray Lewis, and you started the season in jail, and a criminal, and a person is dead, and ESPN, they did this big special, and they went and got the family of the victims, and I mean, it was just a big production about Ray Lewis, and you know, what kind of role model is he, and you know the drill. And I just want people to kind of pay attention to if you see any of that this week with Ben Roethlisberger. Are we going to see any of that? How is ESPN going to cover it? Are they going to go get the victim of this sexual misconduct case and bring her on ESPN so she can tell her story to the world? Just, you know, pay attention. At any rate, I'm just going to read the little bit that deals directly with racism, white supremacy. It says Rooney, and it's talking about this is the white person who the family, the Rooney family that owns the Steelers, and they're talking about Dan Rooney, who is currently the United States ambassador to Ireland. See, I mean, anyway, Rooney supports racism. This is very well documented. Consider the Steelers' star quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, and former star receiver, Santonio Holmes. During the 2009 and 2010 off-seasons, Roethlisberger was accused of sexual assault in a Georgia town and Lake Tahoe, Nevada, respectively. Roethlisberger was said to have engaged in sexual acts in the men's bathroom at bars in these two towns, while a team of ogre bodyguards stood watch outside the door. Roethlisberger was suspended by the NFL to start the 2010 season, missing just four games. The Steelers embraced their quarterback, however, reinserting him into the lineup immediately in week five. Conversely, Roethlisberger's teammate, Santonio Holmes, was traded to the New York Jets after he was accused, in italics, of throwing an object at a female bar patron. Louis Braille can see the racism here. That's funny. Braille, people will read Brian. Okay. Roethlisberger, the white superstar, is retained without question, while his African-American teammate is shipped off to New York for a warm six-pack. Rooney supporters will mutter, "But he made the Rooney rule. This is appalling to me." If Bull Connors had a black secretary, would that mean he wasn't capable of racism? The Roethlisberger trade is a clear-cut example of a white quarterback's marketability making him more desirable than a black player. Rooney proved his racism by trading homes and slapping the wrist of his Caucasian quarterback. Wow. Wait a minute, I got to read this extra part. Slapping the wrist of Roethlisberger highlights yet another way in which Rooney is an execrable, I believe I'm pronouncing it. I don't think I've seen this word before. I will look it up when I'm done reading the paragraph. I believe it's execrable. I think I'm mispronouncing that. I'll look it up afterwards. Person. Roethlisberger was accused of sexual assault. Let's be honest here, folks. If Big White Ben were Big Black Ben, he would have been accused of rape and given the electric chair. The man is fat and out of shape, so he locked himself in a bathroom with an unsuspecting female and raped her. Leaving this act unpunished seems to be the Rooney way. Wow, I'm going to stop there because he kind of goes off onto some other topics that are not so much related to racism, white supremacy. But this article, it's titled "The Rooney Way: The Steelers, Racism, Hypocrisy, Gambling, and Cheating." It's at BleacherReport.com. BleacherReport.com, and it came out on January 25th, 2011. Again, just something to keep in mind. You know, I know the Super Bowl is coming up pretty quick. Keep that in mind as you prepare for the festivities. Let's see. Next up, I have a quick sound clip I want to play. This is from Hustle and Flow. Just a quick sound clip. I was just watching this in between shows to kind of relax a tad before the program, and the beginning of the film really stood out to me, so I decided I would share. So this is the opening lines from Hustle and Flow. This would be Terrence Howard, his character. Hustle and Flow, the film that 3-6 Mafia won an Academy Award for music in a major feature-length film for It's Hard Out Here on a Pimp. That would be the film we're talking about. So this is the opening line, Mr. Terrence Howard. He is a pimp with a perm.
See, man ain't like a dog. And when I say man, I'm talking about man as in mankind, not man as in man. But men, well, we a lot like a dog. You know, we like to piss on things. Sniff a bitch when we can. Even get a little pink heart on the way they do. But we tattoo it as shit, you know. We're going to protect our own. But man, he know about death. Got him a sense of history. Got religion. See, a dog, man, a dog don't know shit about no birthdays or Christmas or Easter Bunny or none of that shit. one day God gonna come calling. So you know they going through life carefree. But people like you and me, man, we always guess, wonder, what if, you know what I mean? So when you say to me, hey, I don't think we should be doing this, I got to say, baby, I don't think we need to be doing this neither, but we ain't going to get no move on in this world, lying around the sun, licking our ass all day. I mean, we man. You a woman and all, but we man. So with this said, you tell me what it is you want to do with your life.
Context of white supremacy. I've seen Hustle and Flow before. I mean, it's a pretty difficult film to watch. I'd put it up there with Precious and Tyler Perry films. It's pretty despicable work. But that opening scene, I mean, that pretty much tells you all you need to know in the context of white supremacy. You have a black male opening up a film talking about what it means to be a man. And humanity. I mean, just listening to it, like when I started and I began listening to that, I was like, this is absurd. Like to have someone who is definitely not a man, I mean, a black male in a system of white supremacy with a perm and he's a pimp.
Double whammy.
Anything but a man. In addition to that, his whole speech is filled with all of these comparisons to dogs. I'm not a man. You know, let me be very, very clear about that. I'm not a man, but when I think about what a man should be and what masculinity should be about, I am not going to use a dog as an example for what I think manhood is about. It's the homoerotic references, making, you know, our behinds. You got someone talking about religion who, again, he is a pimp and a drug seller. I mean, I'm not seeing, you know, much morality from this character who is, you know, he ends the film in jail. You know, he starts the film in prostitution and narcotics. He ends the film in jail. Strange religion we got here. I just thought it was quite pitiful. It was quite pitiful. And then, you know, to add insult to injury, we got, you know, a white female. And she's really young. It's on the pedophilia line. This might be a film to chat about one day, because I know there's John Singleton is the executive producer for this project. And there's a white person who wrote and directed the film. John Singleton did Boys in the Hood. He did Rosewood. He did Black Snake Moan. Let me make sure I ring my bell. John Singleton also did Baby Boy. I think someone mentioned that on the program not too long ago. But yeah, he did Boys in the Hood, Higher Learning, Baby Boy, Rosewood, Black Snake Moan. He has other projects as well, but those are the ones I know. And he was executive producer, I believe, for Hustle and Flow. And I just remember that the white guy that directed this film, him talking about how this was like the story of his life. And I just, even then, I was confused. And I just remember looking at it like the story of your life you felt could be best portrayed with a black male as a pimp and a drug pusher who sings rap songs. Context of white supremacy. Another day. We might put that on tap to discuss Hustle and Flow. There's a black female actress that I dig who's in Hustle and Flow. I wouldn't mind watching it again just to see her. Okay. Done those. Let's see. I had another sound clip that I wanted to play. Oh, and I wanted to share. People had written me things. I want to try and share some of their information. I guess this is also why I did the program. I was curious to see how many people, you know, would tune in for me doing kind of an unplanned broadcast at a very strange time. But, you know, it's a little after 3:30 Eastern, and we have 7 people have called in, and we've been on about 30 minutes. We have 7 callers. I don't know how many people are listening at Blog Talk Radio, but hopefully people who are outside the states, anyone, if you are UK, any non-white folks in those regions, you should be able to dial in. It's morning. Dial in. You use Skype. In fact, if you email me a landline, I could even call you to put you on a program. So want your participation if you're non-white folks outside the states, in the states too, but definitely I really want to make sure the welcome mat is out in front for non-white folks who are outside the so-called United States. So yeah, I will read the information folks mailed to me, and then I will hit the phone lines if anyone wants to comment. I think Tater Pie, she had some things she wanted to touch on. We just added another caller. See, that's great. I figure if there were even 2 people, even maybe 1 person who, you know, was up and wanted to listen to and discuss counter-racism, I feel like, you know, part of if you're on your grind, you should be down. I think Neely Fuller, that's the way his code operates. So want to try to be as close to that as possible. So, yeah, I will hit the phone lines. But I do want to read the information. One of them, this was a female caller in Philadelphia, and I believe I might be incorrect if she's listening to this. I believe this is the caller who called in who said she was neutral about so-called homosexuality, and it's great to hear she's still listening in because I definitely do not agree with that, but it's not about, you know, having consensus, but I do want folks to feel like even if we don't agree, they definitely can still call in and share their view or what have you. So I was glad to hear from her. I think she shared her name on the program before, Marcella out of Philadelphia. She called in to the program on January 29th with Dr. Kevorkian. And I think her line got, or I don't think she, her line got dropped. Asterisk, her line got dropped. And she was trying to comment on the film Splice. So I'm going to read her commentary because I thought it was excellent. And I think Dr. Kevorkian, he was adding to her commentary, which I hope she got to hear in the archives. She said, name Elsa can be categorized as a wholesome name because it means truthful and moral and a morally strong person. So the character Elsa must be of moral value, right? Question. This being that she displays extraordinary power comes from a union, not from sexual intercourse. Again, there's the tension in the film. She and Adrian Brody's character, Adrian Brody, he wants to have kids. She does not. And, you know, they have sexual intercourse, but no children. And relates to the whole story of the original sin. Is twisted. However, if you follow the fuzzy, deranged logic, then it becomes apparent that the rape scene had to be included in this movie. If Elsa is seen as the white mother goddess, then she could not rationally allow for the defacement of her body by having sexual intercourse with a non-white person. When she asks her creation, this beast thing they've created that changes genders and can fly and breathe underwater, they still have sex with voluntarily. When she asks this creature what it wants, the response it has is, I want to be in you. This can be translated to, I want to be white, which is pure, and I am not. Therefore, I am an abomination. In closing, this can also be lumped into the homosexual transgender agenda. I would totally agree, totally, 1,000%. I think I said sexual deviance repeatedly on the program today. And I totally agree about the creature being non-white and an abomination. I think Dr. Welsing, he expounded kind of in the same vein that you're commenting on and saying that it was a plantation story of an illegitimate mulatto child, where they just switched gender roles. I think that was what he was saying on the program. So I hope you got to hear that in the archives if you got disconnected. But I think right on the money. I totally agree with your commentary, Marcella. Totally agree. Let's see. Someone else wrote in with something they wanted to share as well. I'm tracking to my email. Give me a second so I can pull it up, please. Okay. This is from our caller in Atlanta, non-white female. She wanted to know if I could ask the other listeners if they have been experiencing echoes or noise on their phone or calls being dropped when calling into the show. Obviously, yes, I have, Marcella, and I know I did a program earlier this week where I saw about half of the calls on the line get knocked off at once. So I think the answer would be an overwhelming yes. I have noticed since you made the disclosure of Warmer Horizon, Irte Jeni, a.k.a. Ayo Kamathi, Homeland Security employee, that the program has experienced switchboard disappearing, callers being dropped, and noise on the ones that do make it through. On some of the recordings that you have done, Dr. Welzing's two last visits, the Zeitgeist Roundtable, Eitan Edwards, In Search of Black Assassins, there are a few others that I have to go back through and re-listen to. There are lots of echoing, which would indicate that someone might be monitoring the phone lines. I know I'm not paranoid, but I have been dropped while in the middle of speaking on your last show early in the morning. I think a lot of people got bumped off of that call if it's the one that was early in the morning. I recall that as well. I was dropped from the Zeitgeist Review and two other shows while listening, right around the two-hour mark, and unable to call back in. My phone had a full charge, so there were no issues of the batteries going dead. Sometimes I was on a landline when this happened. I would appreciate it if you could do a polling with other callers to see if they are or were experiencing the same problems. I have also noticed this problem when I have attempted to call into your show and other shows that are very conscious. I would be given busy signals, toll-free numbers, told to recheck the numbers and to redial. And when I connected, I would hear my voice sounding as if I was speaking in a tunnel, or I would hear myself repeating back to me, echoing back at me, part of the conversation. I would ask the hosts of the shows if they heard the echoing. Sometimes they would say no, sometimes yes. I also heard on the news yesterday that Congress, under the direction of Homeland Security, is requesting phone companies and internet providers to build larger databases to keep correspondences such as phone calls, text messages, emails, etc. of their subscribers for an indefinite period, which is much longer than they're currently doing. Racist man and racist woman are not interested in replacing white supremacy anytime soon. I totally agree. And I think, yes, I think the consensus, at least from what I have observed, yes, it seems like a lot of people, including yours truly, are experiencing technical difficulties with the show. I don't know, you know, I can't pin it on a person or anything other than I suspect white people who would be most to blame. But, yeah, I don't know what the issue is. I would just encourage folks to pester the white people, you know, let them know if you're experiencing problems. And if you are going to Skype in, if you think you're going to call in, I would advise not waiting till the last minute, like when the live stream ends. I would try to call in a little before then. That way, if there is an issue or a problem, you need to try to call back in. You'll have time so you're not, you know, at the last minute trying to get it done. Definitely don't wait to do that for me, because I know one time I did have an issue trying to add people to my line, and I got disconnected. So, and that I don't think has anything to do with interference. So if you, you know, are going to be on my line on Skype, you should probably let me know that earlier so that I don't have to try to do that at the last minute. That would be helpful. Other than that, I don't have a lot of suggestions. You know what it is, racism, white supremacy, and, you know, expect opposition, period. I'm going to take a quick commercial break and do Justice's commercial one more time, and then I will check. I'll go to Tater Pie first to see if she has anything she would like to share, and then I'll hit the rest of the folks on the phone lines. Context of white supremacy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cows. This is Justice here at Block Talk Radio. If you want to learn, listen, understand, and question, go to blogtalkradio.com/victim-of-racism. And for more information on racism and white supremacy, go to my blog, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com. My email address is justice.asap@yahoo.com. Replace white supremacy with justice. ASAP. You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
Context of white supremacy. Groovy Tater Pie, your line should be open. If you are there, are you with us and your mic in order?
Hello?
Oh, we can hear you. You might need to speak up a little bit.
Sorry. I don't feel good. Yeah, I'm sick, unfortunately.
Sorry. Lots of fluids, rest, lots and lots of rest.
I have a question.
Hello? Okay.
Yes, I typed it to you, but I don't think you caught it, so I just asked it. Is it okay?
Let's see. I don't see any questions. Yeah, just gonna ask.
Okay. On the pages I'm creating, do you want me to copy and paste from your blog, or do you just want me to post the links?
Because
if you go to your,
It doesn't really matter. Like you could copy and paste it. You know, just say it's from Gus, and you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can do it that way. Well, I don't know. Whatever way you think would be most, would be easiest to get the material out.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll go with that. I don't know. Do you want to save, I guess, any comments for a day when you might be feeling a bit better or?
Yeah.
Okay.
If I have something to say, I'll say it. I'll let you know.
Alrighty. Poor thing. I wish I had one of those buttons where everybody goes, oh. Poor thing.
Thanks.
Drink tea and sleep. That's what I'd be doing. Drinking tea and sleeping.
The garlic helped. Remember last time I was about to get sick, you told me about the garlic.
Mm-hmm. Garlic, ladies and gentlemen, garlic, excellent for your immune system. Alrighty, let's see. There are other folks that are hanging out on the line. I'll bring them in as well. And I don't know if you feel a boost of energy, like you're regaining your strength, you can, you know, let us know. Or if we forget about white women, you can let us know. The person that called in, 3193. Your line is open, person from a blocked number. Your line is open, Mr. Nero. Your line is open. Let's see. None. Mighty Wick, your line is open as well. Shouldn't have a whole lot of background noise on the line because it's all like five of us this time, so there shouldn't be tons of background. Okay, the person who called in from a block number, I don't know what that noise is, but there's some sort of noise, and it seems to be coming from your line because I muted your line and I don't hear it anymore. So that would suggest that it is coming from your end. If you are not in a quiet area, if you could use your mute button if you are in a quiet area, it's great. I just we have enough difficulties with white people, so I'd like to keep the background noise down if possible. Thank you. I'll check to see if it's quiet on your end now. Okay, seems quiet. Okay, the folks that your line's open, did you all have questions, comments, anything you wanted to add in?
Greetings, Gus.
Greetings, greetings. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you too, Gus. I don't know what's going on. I was listening to the show both times when Mr. Williams was on before he went dead. I kept hearing a music in the background. And then a whistling sound, and then the line just went, it just disconnected. That was it. So somebody, like you said, somewhat racist man and a racist woman, they're out here playing games, and it happened specifically with Mr. Williams because his show was so very informative, and they just did not want that to go through. So they cut it right off, and it's becoming more and more prevalent as your show is getting more and more informative. I've noticed that there's more noises in the background and more of these interruptions. So as you said, I'm going to have to get in contact with management, but I know, of course, it's not going to do any good because if these people could just plug it from anywhere and just try and interrupt your show.
Yeah. To be expected, I spoke to Mr. Williams. See, I'm hearing it again now. okay, see, that was whoever that is at a block number, that was your line again, sir. So I'll wait a while, go back. Yeah, I spoke with Mr. Williams after the program today, and we both noted how it was pretty much almost at the same time as the program that ended prematurely on Friday, and you know, he just had a good chuckle about that, and you know, just expect that and continue the work. He's been doing radio programs for a long time too, so he knows all about that crazy interference that you get. So yeah, we will look to have him back on the program at some point soon to discuss the book and see if people have questions. So yeah, it should be all good. Oh, and I'm still hearing. I still feel like I'm hearing dishes or something.
Dishes or boxes moving around.
Yeah.
What I'm going to say is, can we do like a book club, like once a month you just put a recommended book out there and we should all read it and we can discuss it like you do with the movies? And that way, see if Mr. Williams would want to come on like once a month, and that way he could give out his information. Because what he had to say tonight, I listened to the information, especially what he had to say with Pam, it was very, very informative because I never thought of it like that, the way he was explaining it. So that would be more of an awareness for the rest of all to get us up to par to where we need to be. Like you're having Pam coming on, if you would want to schedule him to come on once a month and we just do a book a month to read so we could get more on reading in.
That sounds constructive. Constructive. That sounds constructive.
It's a good idea.
Because I don't know if anyone out there have ever read that book. It's called The Choice by Samuel Yes. He passed away last week.
What was the book about?
The book was about, he was telling us about the black condition. He wrote, that book was written back in the 70s. He used to work for Time magazine, and when he wrote that book, he lost his job. He was blacklisted. He couldn't earn an income. He finally got a job at Howard University teaching a course there on journalism and communications. but it told about the black condition somewhat similar along the lines of Dr. Claude Anderson, what blacks need to do. And that would be a very good book for us to start with, The Choice.
Yeah. I think movies have a lot more, not anything, they just have like a lot more visual expressions of what people are trying to say that you can't say in the book, only because I tried to write some screenplays a couple of years ago. It's harder than it looks. I mean, you would think just putting your pen on paper, you know, you'd get something, or, you know, typing on a keyboard, you know, it all come together, you know, in your mind, you play in your movie that you want to write or whatever over and over again 1,000 times, but you never get to finish it. But in a movie, the idea can kind of come fresh from your head. You can actually, you know, hire a shorthand or whatever, and then the movie comes together a lot quicker, and you add in and take away some ideas that you want to express to the whole world. Not everyone's going to buy a book or read a book, but everybody can get a hold of a movie. Either they can't afford to go see it, they can still download it. If they can't download it, they get it on bootleg. They can get it on bootleg. You know, it just keeps going like that. But, you know, books are, they're good. I mean, I wish everybody could be reading instead of just watching movies. But if you want to relay your message faster to where everyone shares either the same perception or a perception within 2 hours rather than waiting for everyone to catch up on a book, you know, that's kind of, I don't know.
Those are good ideas too, but I feel that a lot of times there are a lot of good black authors out here that have written books about racism, white supremacy, and the black condition, like Dr. Claude Anderson. He has several books out there that are very informative, and people we don't hear or they don't read his books or know what's being said about these people. And it's just something to get us to support the black black authors, as well as to refresh ourselves and get more informed as to what's out there. We'll keep up with the movies because, as you said, with me watching movies and commercials, it has just made me so much aware, because one of the real, especially with commercials, because I've started noticing a pattern now with these commercials, especially for the military, you're seeing that they have a lot of non-white blacks as well as non-white Hispanics, Asians, and other ethnic groups. They're pushing this to them, telling them about join the military, today's military, and all of these things that they're pushing out there. And every once in a while, you might see a white family out there, but it's mostly, most of the commercials that you're seeing out here to join the military is being pushed at non-whites. So you're right about the visual, because we are more of a visual people. We like to see things more so than read them.
Yeah. And these are commercials about non-whites, mostly with non-whites in them, you know, joining up, signing for the military, saying, you know, they'll pay for your school or you're guaranteed a job. You have homeless veterans all over the country. How is it the military is so great if you got a homeless veteran? That is an oxymoron. A veteran is supposed to have benefits 6 different kind of ways, and they're all, and they're the first ones out on the street in their military jacket, begging for change.
So
how does it's almost impossible. All you see are, you know, Gulf War syndrome, post PSTD, and, you know, just all kinds of like shell shock and things like that. And you have all these complaints and these holes in the wall where people are getting killed just by friendly fire or day to day activities that doesn't even have to do with the enemy or war.
I'm agree with you 100%, but I was just watching. I was taking a note today. I was looking at the commercial to see. They showed one with a family that looked as if though they could be Arabic family. Then there was one with a Hispanic family. Then there was one with a black family. I didn't see any with a white family, but I've been noticing that these commercials, they are pushed towards these non-whites because we are cannon fodder. They can send you out there, and you could become dispensable because they hope that you. It's cheaper for you to die in combat than for you to come back and for them to have to pay out disability to you for the rest of your life. So, you know, I have a brother-in-law that just left for the military. He's on his way into Kuwait right now. He left on yesterday. So I can, and I have a niece that's getting ready to leave in October. So I have family members over there. So I keep telling them, and when these people pushing these propaganda about you're fighting the war, I said, you're not fighting to save the country. I said, they need to contact ExxonMobil and BP and tell them that they need to be paying you, because what you're doing is you're guarding the oil wells for them. It has nothing to do with you protecting my safety.
I have to agree with that 100%. Exxon, for the oil contracts that went to China instead of America for Iraq, yeah, the oil company should be shelling out billions of dollars paying these soldiers to make the ultimate sacrifice, but they don't even want to do that. They get government subsidies from our government, billions of dollars that they don't even need. So, I mean, just from my perspective, and I've always wondered this, in the world of white supremacy that we live in, I keep just asking these simple questions. I'm like, how much money does a white man need? I mean, just really. I mean, out of all the poor people in the world, or all the, you know, the victims of white supremacy in the world who have no wealth, no power, no influence, you have one man able to make as much money as an entire civilization, 100 million, a billion, just ridiculous amounts of numbers and wealth with no work. I mean, Donald Trump owns Trump Towers, but he didn't build those. He didn't build Trump Towers. So it's kind of like it's. I don't know how it works. Well, we all know how white supremacy works. Just take a look around you. Who owns what? Who owns most of what? And why do they own it? Well, that's easy. But to change it and to change their influence and to change their behavior is a completely different story. Because even in the Bible, Jesus tried that, and look what happened to him. So lessons are learned.
Can I be heard?
Yes, please.
I can be heard?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
Come on in.
Now, see, now, they are, I'm just looking at my switchboard now. My switchboard is showing that I am not on the line, but I'm still on the line. My switchboard says I'm not on the line. I was going to hang up, but I mean, I don't know. That's context.
That's Homeland Security playing games.
Yeah, I don't want to make accusations because I don't know. I strongly suspect a racist man, racist woman are at work again. That's why they do not sleep. 4 a.m. and we're still having this foolishness with the switchboard. 4 a.m. East Coast time, right on. And somebody fell off the switchboard too. Someone else had just called in. Was it 8162? Are you still with us?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Okay, never mind.
Is this De Niro there? What about 909? Is he there?
I see Mr. Nero. His line is open. He might not be able to speak right now.
Okay. 8162, how have you been?
Hey, can I be heard?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm all over the book club. I read books. I enjoy it. And Samuel Yeti was on my list, The Choice. I think that would be an excellent discussion piece. And he pretty much exposed how Planned Parenthood was being strategically placed in black communities.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on Richard Nixon's hit list.
Yep.
You know about him, Seth?
It's just like the black man with the Watergate. Look what happened to that man. He discovered it, and he died in abject poverty. The security guard.
I had heard about Mr. Yet. Someone wrote and asked me to have him on the program or called in. Someone emailed me this week or right, you know, after he passed. And Mark Crutcher, the white man suspected racist who did the documentary Ma'afa 21, he was on the program in December of 2009. And he cites Mr. Yet's work in his documentary, and he talked about his work when he came on the program. His documentary, that was the first time that I heard about the book, The Choice. So, yeah, I do know about it, and I think that also would be very constructive.
I really enjoyed the movie reviews and listening to you and, was it Kevorkian? Dr. Kevorkian? I went places I wasn't able to go before with Splice and Astro Boy. It was very eye-opening.
I've only seen one of that movie. It's the one with Dixon and Ivan Dixon. I haven't seen the other three, so I will make an effort to watch them.
They're... I mean, Splice is it's hard for me to, like, recommend that to anyone. I've watched it again. I'm glad I watched it again because I was able to pick out things to bring to the discussion, and it helped me understand what Dr. Kevorkian was talking about. But, I mean, it was like I had to build up my reserves to watch Splice again. I mean, it's it is just like white people and sexual deviance overdrive. The thing switches genders. I mean, it's just like, what in the world? What is going on here? Like, it can breathe underwater and you're almost its father and you're going to have sex with it, and then you turn around and your wife has. I mean, gosh, it is. Man.
What about Species?
Yeah. Someone else mentioned that film today. They said that's kind of a common thing. And that's the other thing, is that I can't really say, I don't think it would be, I feel like I'm on speakerphone. I'm echoing. Could be white shenanigans, but I hope no one's on speakerphone. Or if you have your computer on, if you could turn the volume down, that would be helpful. But yeah, I can't even say that Splice is that unique, other than, you know, just it's more graphic. But I mean, this is standard, you know, white fiction, standard white summer, Frankenstein, Astro. I mean, we talked about films that are the exact same thing. White people going in the lab, cooking up some monstrosity that they lose control of. And this one just adds the sexual element. But I mean, it's the same type of film over and over again. Just with a lot of sexual deviance.
Hey, you know what, Gus? You were speaking with Eitan Edwards. You know, I happen to watch on HDNet. Y'all might want to, if y'all get HDNet out there with, what's his name? Don Rather, what's his name? Rather Report. And I happened to turn it on the same night when the phone got disconnected abruptly on me, and I happened to be there, and I turned the TV on. And they were talking about these survivalists out in Utah. And they showed how these people were selling these campgrounds or whatever they want to call it. It was fully stocked, starting at around 50,000. And it's approximately 18 feet on the ground. And they show with the beds, the mattress, the foods, and everything else that they have on the ground there. And it's, you know, it's fully sealed off. And they showed this community. They said they couldn't film it, because it's communities throughout the United States and in Europe where they are building this on-the-ground city. And they showed us a scale-up of the city where white people are building these cities. They're collecting DNA, sperm, and eggs from women and men, because it's in the event of a disaster, they're going to have these things and they would be able to reproduce. So it shows how these people, how they're thinking way ahead. I think the place is called Devos or whatever is the name of the community that they are building. And he said it's, the man was on there, the white man. He said they have sold so many communities, and they're all self-contained. They're going to have gym. People would be able to live on the ground for over a year. It's going to be fully stocked with gyms, everything in them. And you will be able to live comfortably on the ground, and it's starting at $20,000 per person in order to get space into one of these places. And he said it's sold out. He said they are building.
Go ahead and make your point. I was just going to follow up with that.
I was just going to say, I'm sure they're not building all that for black people. That was all I was going to say.
Oh, that's obvious.
You're not going to be welcome.
There are too many movies where it's futuristic and there are no black people anywhere.
No.
Astro Boy.
Yep.
You have Pandorum.
These people believe in Christ. And all of these things that they've stored their DNA and they've frozen it because they want to make sure that they can regenerate themselves.
Regenerate little oppressors.
Yeah.
Well, under that survival mode, I've been thinking about, well, what questions would I, as far as you need a group, you know, you need a group to survive, and what kinds of questions would I ask someone in considering or finding out if they'd be somebody who I'd want to be underground with for any length of time? Anybody thought about that?
Someone who is codified. codification would become way more important than a whole lot of other silliness. If we got to be in survival mode, I am really not that interested in what kind of music you like and all that. Can you function in a codified manner like 90% of the time, maybe even 95% of the time like that? I mean, because, I mean, you cannot have a lot of foolishness if we're in, like, survival mode. Like, communication, everything becomes way more important. And if you got people that are careless with words and, you know, they're difficult to get their name calling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to be in a pressure-packed situation with people who just have an effect. I just like to name call just because I like to do it. Like, I don't care if it causes an extra fight or two a week. That's okay. That'll be just a good adventure. I just enjoy it. Man.
Okay, codification plus a skill.
Yes. Because there's no TVs there, there's no electronics you to be fiddling around with. You'll be able to have to either read a book, take some word games like Scrabble.
And for heaven's sake, no Fox News.
Yep. You're right, that's a long time to be on the ground with people that are not codified, a whole year.
I would also say people that have constructive skills, that value would skyrocket. That's one thing I would say I've noticed, just tailoring the company that I keep. Number one, not being afraid to be by myself, but then tailoring the company that I keep and people that I'm around. When you limit your contact to people who are doing constructive things, it just generates more constructive activities. Like I was speaking with a non-white person yesterday, and we were having dialogue about white supremacy, and then it moved away from white supremacy, but it was still constructive. And by the end of the conversation, I had saved $30 and got a software program that is helping me to do the program in a more efficient manner. And I was just like, man, that if we were having that sort of contact on a regular, and the person I was talking to also got a constructive computer application out of this that was a major upgrade for them, and it didn't cost them anything. And I was like, that is the sort of thing that you can have on a constant basis if you are surrounding yourself with people who are doing constructive things. It's just, you will be picking up skills and learning things. It just will really enhance your ability to get things done. It's a huge difference, just noticing your ability to do things increase as a victim.
I agree. Yep. You're right. I wanted to tell you that I really appreciated Running Ninja.
Oh, yeah.
Mighty,
was it
Mighty Ninja? Moving Ninja?
Moving Ninja.
And I had listened to, was Moving Ninja the person that was with you? I was listening to a show in the archives where you were recording it live from, was that the Coalition of Anti-Racist White People?
Yes, he was present then, yes.
That was quite informative.
Is that the one with Kelly, the suspected white racist?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, yes. I think I remember that one where the you had Yellow Manny was on there too. And I think, what's her name? Tran, Christina Tran.
I don't think she was there, but Yellow Manny was present. Non Mighty Wicker present. Back of the Bus. it was quite a few people.
You all were really that show just took a full teachable loop.
Yeah, the one with the guy where they thought he was white. I remember that one.
And I had asked. I liked the having the opportunity to ask Moving Ninja about the Hmong, because here in my area of the world, there's a lot of Hmong immigrants, and they're very segregated, and they are kept segregated by white males.
Whatever happened to the guy, to the Hmong person that was killed when he went deer hunting in the, he had him on trial for murder. Whatever happened to that case?
Oh, he killed six people in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, the one that went in the deer stand that shot those people, killed them.
I'm sure he's under a prison.
Because from what the trial, if I remembered briefly, he said he was tormented by them and called a lot of racist things were said to him.
Mm-hmm.
I find it kind of strange how mostly non-white people are abused and mistreated, yet they're not the most crazy. I mean, that every day you turn on the news, somebody's getting shot. Yeah, they have, you know, we may have gangs and things like that, but we don't walk into schools, we don't walk into malls with guns and start spraying. We just don't lose our minds like that, and we've been under slavery for 500 years. So don't get me wrong, we've had rebellions and all that, but that's only for us to, you know, gain our sanity. I mean, the system that we live under now is insane. It is insane, and it makes no sense. So how are we supposed to function as normal human beings when you're living under a system, an oppressive system, such as white supremacy? It just doesn't happen that way.
Well, why haven't we taken up more arms, in your opinion? I mean, it is race-making, and it is insanity. Why do you think we haven't blown up more white people?
Like, if it were me, I think about it every day. I mean, I have homicidal thoughts about, oh, it's crossed my mind, believe me. That's what my, I keep going back to this, that's what my miniseries was about. My miniseries was about the death of about 70% of white people on this planet, and utopia would be the outcome of all non-white people like merging together in a violent overthrow of white supremacy, since global warming was closer and water was reaching a deadly toxic level, oil was everywhere, food, everyone was getting sick from the food, everyone was getting sick and dying from the medicine, everyone was getting sick, they couldn't breathe from the skies, from the cold, all of that came to a head. A few years from now, and there was the third and last war. The third and last war is when there was an underground network of non-whites who knew what the problem was, which was white supremacy. And since we all came to the conclusion that they are not going to change on their own, that the only course we have left is just a violent overthrow to kill enough of them to where they change or kill them all. So either we're going to kill till they change or we kill them all. And the 30% that were left alive, they changed. There is no more racism within them. They will grow up in a society where they, where everyone is, respected and equal. No one's over anybody. No one's, no Chinese are not trying to race and replace white supremacy, because white supremacy will be the example to which no one wants to be at the brunt force of. If blacks wanted to be supremacists, Asians and everyone else would come together and overthrow us. So because we overthrew white supremacy, utopia is a sustained peace among all non-white people and white people alike.
Well, as I said all along, Christianity is what has kept a lot of us non-white under wraps and under control. Because with that Christian Bible and all that biblical teaching that they've been indoctrinating us with obeying your masters and waiting for your reward in the hereafter and all of that foolishness is what has kept a lid on this violence and from a lot of us from exploding. So that is why they always push that religion whenever they come first. The first thing they do is they capture you with religion. They convert you. And then they know they have you.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot of choices in join us or die.
A lot of us is are breaking away from it, because I was watching on the news on yesterday where this white woman in Florida, she killed her two children. She said they were mouthy and talking back to her, and she drove her son, was taking him to soccer practice, a 13-year-old, shot the child twice in the head and killed him, drove back home, parked the car in the garage, went upstairs, shot her 16-year-old daughter in the back of the head, was sitting at her computer doing her homework, shot her in the back of the head and in the front of the head and left the girl for dead, and was just sitting out on a porch. And her mother is the one who called the police, because she said she was trying to reach her daughter, couldn't reach her, was worried and called the sheriff's department to check on her, and they went to the house and found the mother sitting on the back porch and the kid's dead, still in the park van in the garage. So now they're going to try and say that she had an insanity issue, I'm sure.
I have a technical question regarding Blog Talk Radio. And I'm wondering, Gus, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
You've recently upgraded your service?
Yes, ma'am.
And as far as from the Blog Talk Radio Network, they've upgraded their abilities to provide these services?
Since the time that I first started, yes.
Do they send you alerts about, hey, Dusty Renegade, this new service is available to you, we're able to do this, and Do they give you any feedback when all these calls have been dropped or the shows have been dropped? Do they say, oops, sorry, our bad, or anything? Have you heard from them?
They do not initiate. Like, if you, the times where I have contacted them, where there has been a problem, they have responded, and they generally are prompt about responding. The last time before, you know, all the recent issues today and yesterday, when I had archives that were not accessible, they corrected the problem in a timely manner. Within, I think, less than an hour, they had corrected the problem. But normally they do not initiate any sort of feedback or communication unless it's tied to giving them money. Like they will initiate contact. Back before I upgraded the service, they would say, your program is getting popular. It looks like all of your phone lines were filled. If you give us some money, we'll give you more phone lines. They'll initiate for that sort of thing. Not, you know, oh, man, your show, you know, it looks like the show might have ended and got cut off. You know, what can we do to help you out to make sure that doesn't happen? Never anything like that.
Okay. Do you know who the parent company of Blog Talk is?
I do not. I do not. That's important information. I should check on that. I'll do that.
Yeah. I went right to Wikipedia. And I just wondered if you knew right off the top, and who has stock? If it's a publicly traded, is it? Who are the stockholders? If it is,
that would be good to know. I guess yeah, we can pitch that out. What information we can get about Blog Talk Radio? Who owns it? People that are listening in. It might be people. I know a lot of people that listen. They have their own programs and what have you. So you know, that would be good to know. That would be good to know.
I thought coded language, as far as what Moving Ninja was talking about, calling non-white people. When he said that, referring to non-white people as Mondays, was that, I heard part of that, and the context was that they were testing him. He thought that they were testing him to see if he would go along with it or if he knew. Do you remember that at all? Does anybody?
Could you repeat the...
Moving Ninja. Oh, yeah. He was saying at one point that he was with a group of non-white, non-black people, and they were referring to black people as Mondays.
Yes, I do remember that.
Were there any other, were they testing him? That was one question. Did he say that they were testing him to see if he would go along with it or contradict it or protest? And two, did he say that there were other coded languages that non-black, non-white people used for black people?
I remember him saying that he felt like they were kind of testing him before they told him about the word or whatever to see how he was going to respond. I think he said something to that effect. And I think someone did ask him if there were other terms that he had heard to reference non-white people or black people specifically. And I think he said no, that he just didn't know. I think he said that he just found out about Mondays pretty recently himself, which was not new to me. I'd heard that term some time ago. But, yeah, I don't think he said any others. But, I mean, there are tons of others. Joe Fagan, he's an admitted racist, was on the program in March, and he has a whole book that is about this. It's called Two-Faced Racism. And he got white college students, like almost 1,000 of them, to keep journals, and they wrote down, and they have tons of these sorts of terms. I think one of them was moon crickets, squigger. I mean, they had all kinds of these little terms and codes and ways of talking about non-white people. You can either go back and listen to the program and you'll hear some of it, or you can get the book, or you can do both. Two-Faced Racism, Joe Fagan, the program was in March of 2010.
Okay. Okay. I know I have a couple of those books.
But what I was going to say with what Moving Ninja was saying, which is what I suspected all along, when it comes to white women marrying non-white male, it's always about position and prestige where they're, what they're doing. Because if you look around the TV, like all of these so-called non-white males, like Dr. Sanjay Gupta, he's married to a white female. The same goes with, what's his name on CNN? His name is, he's on CNN, I can't think, Fareed Zakaria. His wife is a white female. So these females, they particularly target non-white males who they know are moving into position where they're going to be high profile, making money. And then that is the one that they hang their hat on. That is what they do, because I remember from being in school, if you're in the pre-med program, the pre-law program, you're going to find all these, or if you're in the sports, if they know that you play sports, all of these white females, they're going to hang on to you, because they're going to ride your coattail and make themselves available to you, because when you leave from there, they know you're going into a very high-paying job. And that is why that, as you said, with his sexual experience, why they were so aggressive with him, because most white females and no agents, and they are very smart. They are going to be going into business for themselves. So she figured that, okay, she's going to throw herself and be aggressive with this person, and hoping that he was going to take her along for the ride so that she could enjoy the good life.
I have an alternate view. I agree with that view, but I have an alternate perspective, just only because I was married to a white woman and I don't have like any power or stature or anything. But and I never did. So it's kind of difficult, but the way you explained how like white women like have this kind of eagle eye to spot who's going to be successful and who's not, and then go for the person who's most successful because of money and this and that, I would say yes to that, because you know the evidence is everywhere, but I mean 100% of them I couldn't really like concur with that. Only the reason because there's a lot of white women who go for non-white males who don't have any money at all. But one thing they do know how to do is encourage. They do tend to lift you up when you're down. They say, don't worry, I know somebody, I'll make a few calls. They'll do something to get, like my ex-wife did, when I'm down and I'm, you know, I don't have a job, I don't have any money, it's always, it'll be okay, this is only temporary, this and that. Always optimistic, always, I know you're going to get somewhere, it just takes time, it doesn't happen right away, you know, just always an upbeat. And, you know, living with my sister and my mom, who are two non-white females, black women, completely different story, you know. You know, my sister, I live with my sister now. She's like, get a job, any job. I'm like, well, wait a minute. I want to get the best job possible so I can make more money utilizing my skills, you know, this and that. She's like, no, you can work at McDonald's down the street and get $5 an hour. It's money. And I'm like, okay, so I can go to McDonald's and apply there and not get a call back. But, you know, I've made some, but the attitude is different. I mean, it just is. I mean, a black woman wants you to be successful, wants you to be successful, no waiting. If you don't have your money right, by the time that you introduce yourself, they ain't trying to hear it. a white woman will at least give you that time of day. You know, let's see what he's about, then make your state a judgment. But also another thing. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I would not go on the limb and say that all black women are like that, because I grew up in a family with both of my parents in it and my brothers and sisters, and they were all tend to be supportive. There are some women out here who want everything quick, fast, and in a hurry, the microwave type that are out there. But as I said, with the white women, and they're going after black men, some of it, yes, is for prestige. Some of it, yes, is for revenge, because sometimes if they come from a home with racist parents who are always putting down black people, it could be they're going against their parents' best wishes to seek vengeance, because some women, they will do that. They will go ahead and pick the worst. I wouldn't say the worst. They would just go ahead and just pick someone beneath themselves just to get back at their parents because of what their parents have always said to them. And, yes, they can uplift you because they have the connections. You forgot we're living in their world. They have all of the connections that they can use their skin color to walk wherever, and they can get you in the door. Most of us non-whites, we don't have that connection to get you in for that first interview or that second interview.
The gentleman that called in, I'm not sure. I just want to play this clip. It's maybe 75 seconds, and when it's done, if you could just let us know, is this you or not? Because I might be, I'm a little old, and I'm certainly heavily victimized, so I might not be hearing correctly. Just let me know if this is you from the previous broadcast.
Can I ask a question for the black male that was married to a white woman? Did you ever find yourself, while you were with her, feeling the need to kind of reject or demean anything related to Africa and, like, disassociate yourself from it? Like, even subconsciously,
no.
You know, maybe you didn't speak it, but, like, you know, ever felt any trepidation about that? Or?
Well, like, if you mean, like, did I feel, like, the pressure to kind of deny my roots and heritage around her and her parents? Yes. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I did have to do that. I had to put my blackness on the side. I had to take that off just like a tuxedo and hang it at the front door like a coat when I come into her parents' house or my ex-in-law's house. And I had to be a completely different person. I had to be articulate. I had to be smart. And I had to be factual. And I was. And
oh, my God. Wait a minute. Oh, that's terrible. Are you saying that being black is not being articulate and smart?
No.
That's what
Let me finish.
The program ended at that point. I just want to see. Is that you?
I remember. We never got to finish. Yeah, go ahead
you?
And finish that point. Finish that point that you were trying to make right there. Finish that
point. Okay. My point was going to be just a statement like that. I mean, oof. I was hurting.
I know.
I felt like I was taking some body blows. Like, oh, my gosh, it sounds like if I am leaving my black tuxedo, my blackness at the front door, and when I go in, now I'm smart, I'm articulate, and I'm factual. What was I when I had my blackness? And that just, oof. I mean,
gotcha.
So
okay.
I might need to use my button a few times.
Okay, see, you didn't let me finish. What I meant was by smart, factual, and articulate is the way they how can I put this? I knew everything about, here's what I know. I know everything about politics. I know some things about the stock market. I know some things about national security, what the president does, what the local government does. I'm informed in a lot of ways that a lot of non-blacks may or may not be, only because it doesn't directly or it's not really apparent that it really directly applies to them. For instance, every time I walked into my ex-wife's in-law's house, they're out to make me look, you know, you don't know anything, you're this and that. I had to take off, that's what I said. I'm intellectual, being black, just fine. But I cannot talk to them how I talk to you. So taking that off at the front door, I had to do that. And this was during the early times when me and her were just dating. We weren't married yet. So I had to watch myself. But I knew things that they didn't expect me to know. That's all I meant. It's not like, you know, all black males are dumb, this and that. But non-whites and black males don't really rush up and study up on, you know, white history or things mm-hmm. that mostly pertain to them. There's different things. I wouldn't expect him to know, you know, who won the hip hop awards last year. I mean, he wouldn't know that. He's not the piece. See, I know his limits, but he doesn't know mine. So I know how to handle him. He cannot handle me. He doesn't know what I know. He doesn't know how smart or dumb I am. He comes already with this prejudice that all black males are dumb. I had to show him something different on his own level. I had to play on his level, his intellectual level, because there's some things that he knew that I knew I didn't know. But it wasn't going to be that much. And even if he talked about it, I would know a little something about it. But it's not like me and him can get together and talk about, well, you know, I was listening to Jay-Z and, you know, I just kind of got this idea, this and that and this and that. You know, can't have that conversation with your wife and, you know, so-called in-laws. Completely different game. So I played the little game. You know, I came out ahead. The problem is they didn't like me. Well, of course you can expect they didn't like me anyway. They tolerated me, but they didn't like me. You know, they knew that I was a little bit too smart because they didn't like the way I was talking to them. Because I was correcting them on a lot of stuff that they should have been up on.
Sounds exhausting.
It is. It's trying to be someone you're not, and that's exactly what I was doing. And I can say that now in hindsight.
Well, that's what you would call duality of personality. That's why when you're involved in these type of relationships, you always have to wear that mask. And sometimes it might slip, and you would not know it. And that is why I'm very comfortable in my skin, and I'm comfortable. I love my black men, and that is why I prefer to be around them. I don't have to keep slipping in and out of personalities. Because it creates that strain. That's why a lot of us go into nervous breakdowns, have high blood pressure, because we try to put up appearances and keep up with these things that we think that other people want us to do.
Yeah, I would say if you're a non-white person, having sex with a white person puts you at a great psychological risk.
Yes, it does. Because it's just as what Pam was stating in her book, and she was very right, because white women could afford to be more open with the black male, because you know the black male they don't have that sway and that power over her. You cannot go out there and soil her reputation, because all she has to do is scream rape or whatever, and she would shut you up, because people are not going to listen to you anyway. They would more be ready to strike you down before they take anything that you have to say. But if she would do the same thing with a white man, he controls the power. He has the power. He could decide. He decides her fate. So she would not do the same thing to a white man that she would do with a black man.
Oh, I 100% agree. Yeah, there were things that, you know, she wouldn't have done with a white male that she wouldn't have done with me. I mean, I find it kind of curious now how, you know, I mean, what do white women want with non-white men? They don't have a great amount of influence over the world or locally as they do. They don't have as much money. They don't have as much access to resources. They don't control businesses, stock around the world, but yet, you know, you just have that anyway. It appears, I mean, just from my observation, it appears for men and women in general, just to animal species, doesn't matter how much money or power you got, you know, a man and a woman getting together is going to happen no matter what the situation, even though, you know, white supremacy exists as it is today. Now, here's where we get into murky water, because as much as bad as white supremacy is, telling people who they should and shouldn't love, that's a slippery slope. We can't go around saying everyone should be with black people, everyone should be with Mexican people, everyone should just stick to Chinese people. I would rather fight the war on supremacy rather than fight this, than rather promote, like, ultimate segregation where everybody just runs to their own corner and then we expect the world to not have any problems. You know, mm-hmm. That isn't so, you know, and even no matter how hard we wish, we'll never get to that point. I mean, I always found it, you know, I asked myself this question, since when is it wrong to love anybody? It's wrong to hate everybody. It's wrong to dislike, but when is it wrong to love any human being?
But you see, you're living in a fantasy world. That's what you're trying to recreate, a fantasy world. Because as Mr. Williams said earlier in the program, we have always been integrated with these people from the time we came on the ship. We were always integrated with whites. They had sex with the women and the men whenever they want. But did that change our condition? No, it did not. Because these people, it was always set up like that. So with you saying that you could be free to love, no one is telling you that you should not marry or you should not love whomever. But what they're putting out there to let you know that these people are not going to love you for you. There is always going to be something there that they're going to hold back from them, because each species want to preserve their own kind. And I would prefer to deal with someone that I know is not holding something back from me, that they're not hiding something from me. And with being with a white person, I would know that they could say things behind my back and they would not want to tell it to me because they would be afraid of hurting my feelings or whatever. I don't want to be in a relationship like that.
In my observation, white women, no matter what their income level is, white women can choose males that they can more easily maneuver than a male they cannot easily maneuver, And so a black male, you know, when a white woman picks that out, a black male looks way more appetizing, you know, because she knows that maneuvering him is not going to be that difficult, especially when sex comes on the scene.
That makes sense.
I just don't find black men that malleable. I mean, that this is maneuverable and appetizing and manipulative. I just don't agree that all black men are so vulnerable. Am I wrong here? Are you all
no.
so vulnerable to white women?
In the perception of, I noticed that in the perception of black women, we are. If I'm not, I mean, not, I mean, I get that a lot. I mean, when I was married, it was, oh, I got all the stereotypes. Oh, he's with her just because she's easy to sleep with. Oh, he's with her because she's probably got money and she's probably taking care of him. Oh, he's with her or she's with him, probably just for the sex.
Why did you choose her? Why? Pick this particular woman out of all the other women out there to all make a life with.
He didn't choose her. She chose him.
No, I
know she
chose him. I'm sorry. I was going to answer the female caller's question. I was going to say, I mean, if you're asking, is a black male vulnerable in a system of white supremacy, then my direct answer would be yes. Yes, emphatically yes. And now, I'm more so saying the point that a black male is more vulnerable than any other male to be chosen on this planet. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, that question was why I got married or why did I choose her?
Choose this particular white woman, because some or the other, I always think that men choose a specific woman, whether or not you feel as if though it would enhance your status or whatever the case. You love her, yes, but I feel that there's something else psychologically that might have been going on at the time that you feel that with a black woman that you would not get. That's why you chose this particular woman.
Oh, okay. So, it's weird because this is another thing that I get from you know, black women is, you know, why did you pick her? You know, what's the matter with it? You know, I got it all. Me being an individual black male, like I was saying before, not 100% black women do it, but a lot of them that I run into, if you don't have the money already in your pocket, a job, a car, a certain standard of living, they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. Hello, how are you? My name's this and this. You want to go to a movie or this and that? Well, what do you do? How much money you make? Well, where you live? Is that your car? I mean, right then and there, they will, a woman picks out the man. The man rarely picks out a woman, and unless you're Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise, they pick their women. They pick their women. I'm choosing the most girl that's available to me, or who's willing to give me that chance, or who's willing to get to know me as a person, not as a bank account. So we got to know each other on a personal level. She didn't ask me for my bank receipt.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
You said a personal level. How did she even talk about racism or anything? Did she tell you that you should suspect her as being a racist white supremacist? Did she ever say something like that?
Oh, well, I only started listening to this program like maybe a week or two ago. I didn't know about, you know, I wasn't aware that white supremacy had been ruling the whole world since biblical times. I mean, I wasn't privy now then.
So how personal do you think you really knew her?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, do I know her as, I guess you're precluding would be, I'll never know her as much as any white man would know her, which is true. Two black people, same deal. But if two people have enough time to talk, you talk about everything. We talked about racism. We talked about what her parents said and how her parents didn't
know.
No,
but what about her? I'm not talking about her parents, but what about her as an individual? How did she interact with non-white people?
Talk back or disrespect or talk down to? No. She went to college, and she had a black female best friend. So she just so happened to learn how to braid hair. So she started braiding my hair. And
Okay, I'm going to give you my definition of a racist white supremacist. A racist white supremacist is any white person who is... Wait a minute. Because I don't want to mess this up. Gus, can you give me your definition? Because that's basically my definition. I love fish. Wait a minute.
Did you ask me for my definition?
Yes, because that's basically my definition. I haven't got it memorized because I usually don't talk, so sorry.
This is why racism, white supremacy is not a spectator activity. My definition. Because, I mean, if I was a white person right now, man, I would be jumping and down laughing. Like, you don't even know what you're talking about. Go sit down.
Right.
And, I mean, white people do that. You heard Tim Wise, you and your 13 listeners.
I got it. Okay. My definition for a racist white supremacist is any white person who directly and or indirectly, consciously and or unconsciously, mistreats a person because they are not a white. with that definition, could your ex-wife be a racist? Like, could you suspect her as being a racist?
Wow. Mistreating any person of non-white ethnicity. I mean, of non-white, you know.
Any person that's not white.
That I'm aware of, that I opened my eyes and, like, directly saw her mistreating someone non-white.
No. Like, could you suspect her, whether you was there or not, of directly, indirectly? Okay, there you go.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Definitely. Most definitely. Look. I mean, her parents raised her to be that way. And like the other woman was saying, you know, some women will seek out, you know, black men in order to make their parents angry. I'm suspected of that. I'm suspected to that theory because, yeah, it does make sense. And, yeah, white women do that.
Well,
but,
regardless what your parents raise you to do, you either going to do the correct thing or you're going to do the incorrect thing. Like, my parents didn't raise me on counter-racist logic. They did train me to question, so that helped for me to lead to here. But, see, it's my choice to follow on counter-racist logic. You see what I'm saying? It don't matter. I don't care about your history and what you was trained to do. Is you going to do the correct thing or are you going to do the incorrect thing? Either you're going to be working towards justice or you're not going to be working towards justice. So,
I was going to say, I just want to get in real quick, and then you can go right back to the pot. I was just going to say that if you're hypothetically, if your ex-wife's parents, I suspect they would have, you know, died when she was born, and then she, you know, was picked up by the most sweetest white people in the world who tried to teach her the right thing, she would have still ended up figuring out how to practice racism as long as she was white, living in a system of white supremacy. So, you know, in other words, the parents are all the way to blame. You know, they're to blame too, but, you know, it's everywhere. You know, it's everywhere.
Yeah. No, I agree with that too. I mean, you can't really escape it. And she is white. She's a part of that system, whether she likes it or not. So she benefits whether she likes it or not or asks for it or not. And the even reason why we got together in the first place was because we had long discussions about everything that we wanted to do in life, how messed up this world was, how we wanted to make it better, what careers we wanted to pursue, you know, things like that. I mean, she opened up about the Negro Start, about her family and her views towards non-whites. So, I mean, I don't imagine that's very hard to do, or for me, in my place, yeah, that's not obvious. Yeah, it's obvious. But just how much and what it relates to and the religion and the practices and, you know, I used to talk to her grandmother, and her grandmother always says, you know, let me say a prayer, and, you know, do you mind if I say a prayer before I let you go off the phone? And I'm like, no, go on ahead. I want to be respectful. So she says a prayer to Jesus and things like that, and then always says that she loves me. She hasn't even seen me yet. She hasn't even known me. We never shook hands. But she says, you know, I love you as a, you know, probably as a human being. But to say those words to someone you don't know, I'm not really with that. I don't think she really meant that. And I know she doesn't really mean that. So it's kind of like this cult personality of saying, you know, those three words when they're really meant to, you know, be said to, you know, express how you really feel about someone. She said that as common as you said hello.
Sorry about that. I wanted to hop in really quick. We have about a minute left. If you're listening, the live feed is going to end, and we'll see if white people allow things to continue. But you should dial in, like, right now, 347-215-6071, 347-215-6071. I would dial immediately if you want to continue listening. And one other person joined the line, 0414. Your line is open. Any of the people that called in, if you decide you want to talk, think you might want to talk, you should probably press 1 now so that you can be heard. 0414, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I did. I can be heard. I'm sure. I can be heard.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. And 8901, okay. You are with us as well as 2645. Got both of you. 0414, please. Everybody that called in with a hand up, all of you, your mics are open. 0414, please continue.
When he was talking earlier, I just really had one question for him. He was making a statement about how the black woman wants him to just have a job. It doesn't matter what it is. And this woman was more accepting of him not having anything. And I have like three questions. My first question to you would be, what did she have? Did she have a job? Did she have a car?
She was living with her father and her stepmother. She didn't have her own this and that, so she borrowed her father's truck to come get me and had her own money because her father makes money. So naturally, she has money and she would, you know, spend that on me if I didn't have anything.
So my next question would be, when it comes to you can't accept a black woman that's in the same condition as you and wants you to do better, you would rather be with someone that has more than you.